Chris Ewott, City Manager.
Elizabeth Hall, City Attorney.
Very good. We had closed session, and we will report out, if you would. Elizabeth Hall?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So there were two items on the agenda for closed session. The first was conference with legal counsel regarding real property negotiations. This related to a piece of property known as a portion of Pioneer Park. The council did not go into closed session and discuss that item this evening. The second item on the agenda was conference with legal counsel regarding the initiation of litigation pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.9D4, and this relates to a piece of property at 2548 Spring Street, and the council did discuss that item, but there's no reportable action this evening.
Thank you. Moving on, presentations. We have six tonight. Four of them I will start, and if I could have Melissa Bailey, our city librarian, and Angelica Fortin, our community services director, come on up, and actually staff. Looking group, all right. Proclamation, National Library Week 2026. Whereas, since the founding of the Carnegie Library in the city of El Paso de Robles in 1908, city leaders have recognized that libraries are cornerstones of democracy, promoting the free exchange of information and ideas of all members of our community. And whereas, the Paso Robles City Library is a vital community hub for learning and education, health and wellness, community engagement, quality of life, and cultural pursuits and economic development. And whereas, our valued library workers and dedicated volunteers are joining library supporters across the nation to celebrate National Library Week. Now therefore, let it be resolved that I, John Hammond, by virtue of authority vested in me as mayor, and speaking on behalf of the entire city council, do proclaim the week of April 19th through 25th, 2026, as National Library Week, and encourage all Roblands to visit their city library this week and explore what's new and engage yourself with your librarian. Very good.
Would you like to say something, Melissa?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, and thank you, City Council, for recognizing how important the library is to our community. And we appreciate the important work that our staff, volunteers, and our support groups like the Foundation do for us and our community every day. So for National Library Week, we encourage you to come in, visit the library if you haven't been for a while, get a library card, and perhaps say hi to one of your lovely working librarians.
All right. Thank you. Okay, yeah, you two stay, and you guys can, we're going to do another presentation, so I guess that works too. And if I can have past mayor of Tascadero, Mr. Tom O'Malley, and okay, all right. And let's get Jennifer Martin, if you could come on up, Jennifer, that would be good.
Yeah.
First, we're going to be doing the first thing. There's two things we're doing here tonight. First one is the $2,000 scholarship, and that scholarship is the high school scholarship that the Kiwanis and Mr. Tom O'Malley has designed to get done, and maybe you can say a little more about it, and it's going to be presented to the Library Foundation, and we can tell everybody about what's happening.
Sure. Well, you may remember Mayor Martin, a good friend of mine. Not only was he a former mayor, he's also a former president of Kiwanis in Paso, so we both had those positions in our respective cities, and all through our lives, Steve and I did stuff together. We started the Winemaker Dinner 17 years ago. And you got to have wine for after every meeting, right? Anyway, from that, we in Kiwanis wanted to have an ongoing scholarship that we're working with Mayor Hammond on for through the school. But what I am doing through our Mother's Day event, again, which is a fundraiser where we invite families of special needs populations throughout the county, primarily Escuela del Rio. So they get just a special day for families that wouldn't necessarily have a special day. But we make so much extra money, we like to give a few things in memory of folks. We're doing an ongoing $2,000 a year to Pastor Robles Library Foundation, just because former electeds really don't like categorical funding. So we're just saying, here's money. Do whatever you think is best used for youth in your community. And I know the Martin family has always been supportive of we're doing what we can to remind folks what a special person Mayor Martin was and how much he cared for our communities and especially youth. So with that, I'll figure you'll know what to do with that check. Thank you, Mayor.
Why don't you get the camera? So, I'm going to give you one of these two. And this is something you take home. This is a certificate of recognition statement from the City of Paso Robles. The City of Paso Robles proudly recognizes the Atascadero Kiwanis Club and the representatives of Mayor Steve Martin's Literacy Scholarship, which is founded, I guess today would be a good start, for their continued commitment in education and community enrichment. Through their generous contributions, a $2,000 and a future scholarship of $1,500 will be also given to the library for reading programs. These efforts directly support the late Mayor Martin's wish to support youth literacy and long learning in our community. The city extends its sincere appreciation to all involved for honoring the legacy of Mayor Steve Martin and for the lasting impact the students and families will have in Paso Robles because of Steve. Thank you very much.
Steve would be very pleased.
Yeah, please.
Steve loved the library. He was always a big supporter of the library. He was a believer in lifelong education, and he practiced that, and the library helped.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much for being here, Jennifer. Appreciate it for Steve. Next, if I could have Maggie Payne, Solano Obispo County Office of Education. Maggie? You have others? Come on up.
Sure.
Yeah. This is a proclamation, Month of the Child and Child Abuse Prevention Month, April 2026. Whereas the Paso Robles City Council recognizes that children deserve all collective investment, an investment in strong early childhood systems, including access to quality child care and early learning opportunities, supports not only the health and development of children and the stability of families, but also contributes to the economic vitality and long-term prosperity of our community. And whereas April, recognized as Month of the Child and Child Abuse Prevention Month, provides an opportunity to celebrate and wonder the promise of childhood while reaffirming our commitment to ensuring that every child has access to safe, nurturing environments at home, in childcare, at school, and throughout the community. And whereas the City of Paso Robles has demonstrated leadership in supporting families by partnering with Community Action Partnership, known as CAPSLO, Child Care Resource Connection, to conduct a market analysis for Paso Robles families. And whereas the study engaged local child care providers and community stakeholders to better understand the child care landscape, including barriers related to workforce shortages, affordability, and facility capacities, and identified opportunities to strengthen the child care system to meet the needs of working families. And whereas, during Child Abuse Prevention Month, our community also raises awareness of the many children who experience abuse and neglect and renews our commitment to strengthening families, supporting prevention efforts, and ensuring that every child grows up and safe in a supported and valued family. Now, therefore, let it be resolved that I, John Hammond, by virtue of the authority vested in me as mayor and speaking on behalf of the entire City Council, do hereby proclaim April 2026 as Month of the Child and Child Abuse Prevention Month. Would you like to say a word?
Thank you. All right, well, Mr. Mayor and esteemed council members, my name's Maggie Payne. I'm here representing the San Luis Obispo County Early Care and Education Planning Council and First Five San Luis Obispo County. We, in partnership with families and the community, plan for and promote accessible services of the highest quality for the care of all children and youth. I'm honored to accept this proclamation as we recognize this month as a time to celebrate, uplift, and commit ourselves to the well-being of the youngest members of our community. I'm wearing blue today to honor my commitment to preventing child abuse, as April is also recognized as Child Abuse Prevention Month. Blue is worn to show support for all of the agencies and organizations coordinating their efforts to protect our community's most vulnerable. Together, their vital work ensures the promotion of programs that build strong and thriving families. Every child deserves a hero, and every child deserves love, support, and the chance to dream big. I want to express gratitude to the City of Paso Robles for this meaningful recognition. This proclamation is not just an acknowledgement of the work we do, but a call to action for all of us to ensure that every child has what they need to grow, thrive, and succeed. April is an opportunity for us to take time to pause and reflect on how we, as the adults and leaders of our world, impact our community's children and families with every decision that we make. Thank you again for this honor. I accept this proclamation not just for myself, but for every educator, parent, mentor, and advocate who works tirelessly to encourage and inspire and support the children of Paso Robles and all of San Luis Obispo County. It truly takes a village to raise children, and we're so glad that you are a part of ours. Let's keep making a difference, because when we invest in our children, we invest in a better future for all of us.
One more, Earth Month, Jaybird Blue, Slow Climate Action Coalition, come on up. Yeah. You bet. And your name?
Jaybird. My name is Jaybird Blue.
Jaybird. Oh,
I'm that Jaybird.
That's really cool. Yeah. I've never heard that name before. That's great.
I'm the first and only. There can only be one.
Well, okay. That's perfect. Break the mold. Proclamation, Earth Month and Slow Earth Fest, April 2026. Whereas the City of Paso Robles recognizes and protecting the natural environment and responsibility management natural resources is essential to health, prosperity, and quality of life in our community. Whereas April is recognized around the world as Earth Month, providing an opportunity to promote environmental awareness and encourage sustainable practices that protect the planet for future generations. And whereas the City of Paso Robles supports sustainability through programs and initiatives that promote water conservation, energy efficiency, responsible land management planning, recycling and waste reduction, and protection of natural resources within our community. And whereas Slow Earth Fest 2026 brings together residents, businesses, nonprofit organizations, and public agencies from across the region to celebrate environmental stewardships, highlight sustainable solutions, and inspire community action. And whereas SLO Earth Fest provides educational opportunities and recognizes for the many organizations and volunteers who are working to conserve natural resources, reduce environmental impacts, and build a more sustainable future for the Central Coast. Now, therefore, let it be resolved that I, John Hammond, by virtue of vesting in me as mayor and speaking on behalf of the entire City Council, do hereby proclaim April 2026 as Earth Month and recognizes SLO Earth Fest 2026 for its leadership in promoting environmental awareness, sustainability, and regional collaboration. Jaber.
Thank you. Can I
try
you?
Okay. All right. Thank you so much. And good evening, Paso Robles City's Council. I want to thank you for proclaiming April as Earth Month. More specifically, the child I used to be is in the one that grew up on a family farm on Jardine Road wants to thank you. Back then, that child knew very little about the global concerns, but she knew that a well-tended garden fed her family and her pet chickens. She knew the peace that came with watering her rows of vegetables and the excitement of planning her yearly entries in the Mid-State Fair. She knew the simple thrill of winning the best flower arrangement and the pure joy of the zucchini car races. It's true, I had the biggest zucchinis too. As I grew up, I learned about very real threats to our environment. I realized that tending a garden today is much more challenging than it was in the 90s. But as I sought out knowledge, I felt a calling to do whatever I could to ensure the next generation feels the same calm and connection that I felt in my garden. I've learned that every effort matters, no matter the size. And that is why I jumped at the opportunity to be here today as a Paso kid myself to thank you, Paso Robles, for this proclamation on behalf of my child self and my grown self. We see you. We appreciate your commitment. And I look forward to growing alongside the city through many efforts, many more gardens, and many more Mid-State Fairs and Earth Fests. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
You bet. I know there's going to be plenty of other Jaybirds this fair coming up here. First second week in July, isn't it, I think, is when it starts this year? Yeah.
You know, I am the coordinator for Earth Fest, so that's all I can think about right now.
Stay focused.
I believe you.
All right. Very good. Thank you for coming. All right. Moving on. Capital Projects. Adidas Esperanza, do you have that for us?
Good evening, Mayor, members of the City Council, and the audience. This is the monthly public works construction projects in progress. So this is a list of projects that are currently in construction. I will highlight just a few of them. The first one is the pickleball court / Sherwood Park improvements. As you can see, the pedestrian bollards are installed. The benches over the shading are in. Those are the benches that the pickleball players would be sitting at waiting for their turn to play inside the court. The shade structure has already been installed as well, along with the barbecue grill and the park benches. And next week, or in a couple of weeks, it'll start looking more like a pickleball court as the contractor will begin lining the stripes and the courts. The pickleball court, as well as the individual between courts fencing, will be installed, and then it will really look like it's ready to go. However, we still have a few things to do, as in some more site work. We still have to finish some irrigation, landscaping, providing power, meeting the requirements of PG&E so that they can come and provide power to the park. And so we're not quite ready yet, but soon we will. We're projected to complete it about end of May. The next project that's in progress is called the Capitol Hill Sewer Project. This the street, the Capitol Hill Street, was one of the original list of the Measure E12 projects to be streets to be reconstructed. But before we could do that, we had to upgrade all the old sewer lines. So we're doing that right now. They should finish soon, and then we will begin. We'll initiate the road repair design for Capitol Hill. The Sierra Bonita Road Repair Project is going on right now. It's going pretty well, and it's progressing quite well. And all the dig-out repairs are done. We've done the leveling course, and so they should be done by the end of the summer. The next project is on the west side, which we refer to as the Fiberized Slurry Seal Project. That's pretty complete. This week, they're doing the pavement markings, the stop signs, the dip, slow down signs on the parking, and then the parking, the angled diagonal parking stripes on 13th Street. So that will be done, and then we'll move on to the next fiberized slurry project. And again, fiberized slurry is a special material that we've discovered that we're trying to use all over town. It's a much more robust than a typical slurry seal, and it's only, quote unquote, a treatment that's not rigorous, so it does not require us to do any upgrades to our curb ramps, which saves us some money and allows us to spread the money further and do more streets. So that leads me to the upcoming projects. Since most of these projects are coming to a close, we have a few more that will be beginning pretty soon. And here's the list of them, and I'll just highlight a few. First and foremost is the Creston Road Corridor Phase 2 project, which has a roundabout at Rolling Hills. And so the project limit does start right around Rolling Hills and goes all the way to Niblick. I'm pleased to announce that the project has been advertised for bids, and bids are due April 23rd. And if the bid that we receive is a good bid, then we'll be poised to recommend a construction award to the City Council at their meeting in May. And so then we will be ready to begin construction right around soon after the school is out for the summer. The downtown streets, which are all in red here, we're beginning our design. And we should finish with the design end of this year, and we should look at having this project begin construction in early spring, summer of 2027. The other project that we're starting is the Orchard Bungalow project. We're just finishing the preliminary design. We've gathered all the field data, and the consultant right now is reviewing the field data to determine what is the best option maintenance treatment that we would do for these old streets. The other one is Sherwood Neighborhood, is under design as well. We hope to finish the design later this year. And again, this would be ready to be in construction in early summer, late spring. So we'll have two big projects going on next year. One on the east side, one on the west side, and of course, Creston Road Corridor will still be happening at that time. Commerce Way, I'd like to say, is also out to bid. The bids are due May 14th, and we hope to get good bids, and so by the time the sewer is completed, and then we'll be ready right on the heels of it to do the road repairs for Commerce Way. Riverside from 17th to 21st is also out to bid. That's to upgrade all the curb ramps and the sidewalks using CDBG funds. And once the curb ramps and the sidewalks are completed, then we would be ready to do the road repairs. So again, that's out to bid. The bids are due next April 16th. And if that's a good bid, we will be ready to recommend award of the project to the City Council. We would begin the work, but then right before the fair starts, we will stop the work and clean it all up to get ready for the fair, and then they will restart after the fair. And then once all the curb ramps and the sidewalks are installed, then we would start the road repair project as well. And again, this street is still, it was still on the list for the E12, measure E12, now J20. That concludes my report, and I can answer any questions if you wish.
All right, thank you, Dietis. Questions on my left?
Thank you, very helpful. How long do you expect the downtown project to last with Park and Pine Street? How long do you think the construction?
For construction, I would say it's probably a good year, year and a half. It's a lot of streets.
It's a lot of streets. It's a lot of blocks.
Yes.
On two streets. And then you have the website here, and you do like weekly updates. So people, how would somebody sign up for those email alerts just to be informed on your capital projects updates?
It's part of the weekly CMO report that the city manager issues.
But people can also sign up for an email update, I think?
Yeah, I believe the report that's sent out by Public Works is available online, and then there is a way on the website to sign up for it. If not, we'll circle back with the team tomorrow and check in on that.
Great. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Councilman Balish.
Thank you. Dietis, great report, as usual. Thank you. On the Creston Phase 2, bids are out. Very excited to hear that. It means we're getting closer. We're waiting for school to get out. Are you fairly confident that between the bid award that the contractor is going to be able to cycle up and actually start as soon as possible after school is out?
Well, that's the goal, yes.
Was that part of the bid?
Well, what do you mean part of the bid?
Is it a start date?
Well, before you have a start date, they have to sign the contract, and then they have to provide their performance bonds, their labor bonds, their certificates of insurance, and then we have to make sure that the city attorney accepts those paperwork, and if it's all good, then we issue a notice to proceed. So we can't really control what the contractor will submit. We assume that it's good and it will be approved at the first submittal, but sometimes they don't, and so, but that's the goal. That's why we're awarding in May, so it'll give us the whole month of May and part of June, because school, I don't think school's out till middle of June, end
of June.
June,
right.
Yeah.
Okay, fingers crossed. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Councilman Strong, Pro Tem Gregory, okay. I'll open up real quick. Anybody would like to have a question of our capital projects engineer, come forward. Okay. We'll go ahead and close that. Thank you very much, Dietis.
Thank you.
Next, we have a legislative update from our city manager, Chris Huat.
Yes, thank you, Mayor. The city contracts with Townsend Public Affairs to provide legislative work in Sacramento and Washington, D.C. They are essentially our eyes, ears, and voice in both of those locations. So given the timing at the state level, the legislature has been back in session for a minute, bills have been introduced, the governor has unveiled his budget, and there's been some updates on both of those sides. We thought it would be a good time to bring in Townsend to provide you all with a legislative update and answer any questions you have. We are in close communication and contact with Casey and his team on a weekly basis, if not more frequent. And so they have done an excellent job in keeping us apprised of things that are happening, but thought it would be a good opportunity to brief the council as well. And I believe Mr. Elliott also has an update on some of the grant work that they also do for the city as well. So with that, I will turn it over to Casey Elliott with Townsend Public Affairs.
Casey, welcome.
Thank you. Happy to be here, Mayor, Council Members, Casey Elliott, Vice President, Townsend Public Affairs. Want to provide you a brief update on a couple of different areas of activity that are going on, both at the state level, federal level, and then, as Chris mentioned, just some of the funding items that are currently in process. On the state level, we kind of look at things in two sets of timeframes, the policy bills, the calendar that those operate on, and then in parallel, the state budget process. From a legislative policy standpoint, the bill introduction deadline this year was February 20th. There were about 1,900 new bills introduced this year. From a Sacramento perspective, that's what I'd refer to as a relatively light year. They put in some bill caps last year, so we're seeing some of that lesser volume this year. We're now moving into a phase where policy committees are looking at these bills and giving them their once-over in their original house. Those policy committees will be going on through the beginning of May. Then they'll be evaluated for fiscal bills, and then we'll do the whole process over again in the second house, wrapping up this year by August 31st. So the state legislative cycle works on a much quicker pace than the federal side. At the same time, we have the state budget going on. I'll get into some details in a moment. Really, the mile markers, the governor introduced his January budget proposal in the first week of January. The legislature now is reviewing the various elements of that proposal with the legislative analyst's office, the various departments at the state, getting more information. We're really waiting for the May revise, which will be around May 14th this year, where the legislature receives from the governor updated revenue numbers, updated expenditure proposals, and then the legislature has to adopt a budget bill by June 15th. I always joke that is the one deadline in Sacramento that gets met every year, because if the legislature does not pass a budget by June 15th, they do not get paid. So June 15th, we will have a state budget. We will likely have cleanup legislation, budget trailer bills that continue through the end of the session and potentially into next year, given some of the volatility that's expected in the economy and revenues for the remainder of the year. As we look at the legislature, just a couple of overarching dynamics that are impacting the session. Obviously, first and foremost is kind of the dueling priorities between California and the federal administration, between the Newsom administration and the Trump administration. We're seeing any number of proposed bills, legislations, regulatory actions, legal actions, back and forth that reflect the difference in priorities between the two coasts. So that has crept into legislation, that is creeping into kind of a lot of the conversations, the budget conversations. So that continues to be a major theme of this legislative session. Additionally, we do have some new changes in leadership in the Senate. There was a new pro tem, Senator Monique Lamone out of Santa Barbara, took over this year. This is the first session she has her leadership team in place, her committee chairs in place. And with that, we just get a little different flavor of how committees review bills, what their priorities are, how they're going to function. So we are operating under that structure this year for the first time, which is just a new little wrinkle. Kind of staying on the election theme, this being an election year, not only do we have issues with members, particularly post Prop 50, you have a number of legislators that are running for Congress that are termed out or otherwise. We obviously have the top of the ticket, all of the statewide constitutional offices are up for election this year. And then where the legislature gets involved is the ballot initiatives. With November, we would anticipate 10 to a dozen statewide level initiatives under rules that have been in place for the last decade. The legislature takes more of an active role in negotiating both legislative measures, for example, a housing bond or something like that, as well as negotiating with initiative proponents on measures that they may be trying to get on the ballot. So you have the legislature engaging in topics like CEQA reform, which is being pursued through a ballot initiative, local tax thresholds, which are being engaged through a ballot initiative, and any other number of things. That will ramp up really in June. So the deadline for the legislature to put ballot measures on the ballot is late June. So if any deals come together with ballot proponents, they typically want to see legislation approved before they will start making modifications to their proposals. So again, we'll just kind of have that additional election overlay with the legislative activity. And then kind of overarching on everything is the potential changes in the economy, the broader state economy, the potential for slowdown impacts to things like the AI industry, the revenues that's coming through there, impacts from federal tariffs, tourism, all of these things are really just kind of having an impact not only on the state budget and the revenues coming in, but policy and what measures we can approve, what the state has money for, what new programs they could do. So those are some of the larger themes. As we look at, I'm going to touch briefly on some of the specific areas impacting local governments that are being discussed. I will let you know I am not going to touch on all 1900 bills, just a few, but a couple of large items that we're seeing. a lot of bills this year related to e-bikes. That tends to be, we're seeing that as a growing issue statewide in any number of communities. Really this year, I think the legislature has, I've labeled six here, I think there's about eight e-bike bills in total that are really trying to put what I would consider more on the ground rules, speed limits, engine size, capacity, appropriate helmets and headwear, potential state registration of these bikes, really tried to as a, in response to some of the incidences we're seeing on the ground, not only between e-bike riders, but their interactions with vehicles, pedestrians, other bicyclists. I do think, for example, AB 2346 contains numerous recommendations that were done by the Mineta Institute. So now that we're starting to see some of these outside academic organizations really kind of align with what we're seeing on the ground and the incidences, the legislature is getting involved. So I do anticipate we'll see a number of these bills advance this year. Additionally, we'll continue to see bills related to housing and land use. Obviously, the last number of years, we've seen a lot of bills in these areas. I would say that of the bills introduced this far, so thus far this year, we're not seeing quite the number of bills that are aimed at overriding local land use and zoning. We're seeing more modifications of previous bills, some minor amendments. We are seeing a lot of bills continued in response to some of the issues that are popping up in Palisades and Pasadena as those communities are rebuilding and some of the unique issues that are going on there related to zoning, but also insurance and building and just facilitating additional construction. Additionally, as we talk about homelessness, AB 1708, that's a key bill that's moving through the legislature this year. It's aimed at providing cities of with populations less than 300,000 a direct means to an allocation to address homelessness funding. In the state for the last number of years, the primary program, HHAP, has really been geared for counties and large cities with smaller cities having to work through their local continuum of care. This bill would provide a direct pipeline for smaller cities under 300,000 to have a direct allocation of that funding as well, in acknowledgement that obviously homelessness is an issue throughout all communities of all sizes. Did mention Pasadena and Pacific Palisades. There continue to be a number of bills in response to wildfire, both on the response side as well as the preparedness side. We are seeing bills like 2517, which are in response to the state fire mapping process. 2517 would increase the local engagement through that process, requiring the state fire marshal to work with local governments, provide opportunities for local feedback, input, while maps are being identified, evaluated, would also require that those maps be revisited every 5 years. So really putting in more of a strict time frame in place. We're also seeing legislation that is aimed at improving home hardening, so providing homeowners with those proactive steps that they can take, but then also following that up with legislation that if homeowners do take those steps to harden their homes, to ensure that that's reflected in their insurance rates, their ability to access insurance, and potentially provide some funding for community-wide hardening efforts. And then kind of the last area I thought I'd touch upon is revenue and taxation. One of the key bills that we've been working on with the city manager and city staff has been SB 922, which relates to the ability to use maintenance fees, franchise agreements for local roads. That is an issue that we've been working with Senator Laird on for the better part of a year. The legislation this year is being sponsored by Cal Cities. They have been actively engaging cities up and down the state on this bill, which is great to see. Obviously, that's an issue of statewide importance, ensuring that we have adequate resources to maintain our local streets and roads. That bill has moved out of policy committee, is currently on the Senate floor, is moving through unopposed. So that is one that I know the Cal Cities has been active about, and I think the mayor, for those of you that may be up later in this month, I believe the Cal Cities is going to make that a priority on their advocacy days at the end of the month as well. We also have additional revenue and taxation bills related to tax sharing agreements, There's legislation related to the phase out of the penny, so any number of things that are going to impact municipal finance. As we move over to the state budget side of things, I'm going to first preface by saying that everything you're going to see on the screen is based on the governor's January budget, which was introduced in the first week of January. Pretty much everything has changed, and everything will change going into the May revise, but this is kind of where we stand. The governor proposed a budget that's just under $350 billion in total funding, about $248 billion of that is state general fund. That budget has a proposed deficit of approximately $2.9 billion. The governor proposes to delay a $2.8 billion payment to the state's rainy day fund. So effectively, the budget he introduced is flat with no operating deficit. The $42.3 billion in revenue, that's based on what the legislature's approved budget last year thought was going to come in. So revenues through the end of calendar year 25 into 26 continue to be robust. Actually, the Department of Finance came out this morning and said through the first 3 months of the calendar year, state revenues are up about $7 billion over projection. So money still keeps coming in. The state does, through the January budget, does contain a $14.4 billion rainy day fund for use in future budget years. And then the budget, the governor's proposed budget, has no new taxes or significant revenue adjustments in it. As we move into the May revise, the big story is going to be these fluctuating revenue projections. In November, the Legislative Analyst Office was projecting an $18 billion deficit. Now you're hearing folks in Sacramento talking about as much as a $5 to $10 billion budget surplus. It really just reflects the kind of the unknown variables on revenue. We will have a much better idea, obviously, after April 15th, which is what the May revise will be based on. So the level of revenue available will really drive what proposals are contained within the May revise. We are seeing a lot of pressure from shifting funding and shifting requirements from the feds, from the federal government onto the state government, and then on the local governments, particularly in the areas of health and human services. Some of the cuts and changes that were made within HR 1, approved by the federal government earlier in the year, have significant changes to the SNAP program, CalFresh program, impacts to Medi-Cal. So the state budget's just kind of having to readjust and reprioritize some of their spending to account for that. And then I think that maybe I'll just kind of skip to the end that we are seeing continued rollout of previously approved bond dollars, Prop 4, park dollars, cap and trade dollars. So there continues to be a significant amount of funding in future programs that should be eligible for funding. Moving over to the federal side of the House, obviously there's been a lot of gridlock in DC. Not a lot has been moving through on the on standalone legislation. One area that we have seen movement and we are continuing to see progress is on federal appropriations. I have here are two sides, kind of the wrap-up of FY26 that occurred kind of over three chunks between November and February of this year, and then the beginning of FY27, which we're in the process of right now. The appropriations process does provide and has provided an opportunity for the city to directly access funding through congressionally directed spending, otherwise known as budget earmarks. The city has a strong track record of working with Congressman Panetta, as well as Senator Padilla, working with Senator Schiff now to help secure funding for city priorities. As part of the FY26 appropriations bills, there were two direct allocations provided that will benefit the city, $850,000 for the Pine Street Affordable Housing Development. There was also $1 million provided to Cal Poly Partners for the spaceport training and research facility. Those are done. City will, and the Cal Poly Partners will begin working with the implementing agencies to secure those dollars and get those deployed. We're also now quickly beginning, we shifted from FY26 to FY27. The president released his proposed budget earlier this week. Congress is moving forward. Congressman Panetta, as well as the senators, have continued to solicit new projects for potential funding as part of the federal appropriations project process. The city submitted three projects to consider for consideration to the congressman and the two senators, one for the city library, one for middle mile broadband out to the spaceport, and then a third project for some public safety camera upgrades throughout the downtown core. Happy to say, no coincidence from earlier presentations, that Congressman Panetta has advanced the library redesign project. That has been advanced over to the House Appropriations Committee for evaluation and potential inclusion in their markup. That markup we would anticipate later this spring. Final appropriations bills likely won't occur until after the elections, but really that markup is kind of the key point in time. The senators have not yet made decisions on what projects they're going to push forward, so there is still potential for having the other projects included for direct funding, but very positive support from the congressman. Also, been fantastic working with city manager, his staff, city staff on the submission of these projects. Definitely couldn't have been done without their help. And then the last item I'll just briefly touch on, as Chris noted, my colleague Alex Gibbs, our grants director, also works with the city to provide support for grant funds for federal and state competitive grant funding. This is just a snapshot of some of the projects that have been funded over the past, I want to say, 18 months or so. I think it's a little over $1.1 million, and then as well as a couple of pending grants that have been submitted that we're just waiting on announcements. So about another $4.6 million pending there. Our grants unit works closely with city manager's office, city departments, to help identify upcoming grant opportunities, try to align those with upcoming city needs, and then develop options for applying for those grants as it makes sense. And with that, I am happy to answer questions on any of those items or anything else. Thank you.
Thank you, Casey. Starting on my left, any questions? Okay, on this side. Okay. Casey, I had a question.
I'm sorry.
Sure, go ahead.
Fred? Rather than get down into the weeds, I would like to know, are the positions we're taking generally the same as Cal Cities and NLC?
I would say generally yes. There have been some areas where the city has been a little bit more aggressive. So for example, on the 922, that is something that the city had raised to Cal Cities and really tried to put on their radar. There are no positions that we've taken counter to Cal Cities. So I don't mean to say that in a way that the city has taken positions in contrast with them. However, there are some areas that we've been trying to focus and raise their profile.
But you're monitoring them and staying informed.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yep.
Thank you, Fred. Casey, on the SB 922 for Laird, the maintenance of the cities that can charge for maintenance on the streets, I think I heard you said that there was no opposition on the floor, or how is that sitting right now?
Yeah, so there was no opposition in committee, and I probably should have been clarified on that. There were no votes in committee. How about that? There has been some concerns raised by the building industry, CBIA, over concerns that they feel the language may facilitate the ability for cities to create road taxes. We've been working with Senator Laird's office and his staff, and we just kind of have different interpretations of the language. So there are conversations going on to see if some kind of amendments can be reached that would address their concerns, but still facilitate what we're trying to do with the bill. So Senator Laird and his staff have been having conversations with CBIA. They are the only registered opposition. I believe they have an opposed unless amended position.
I imagine the League of Cities kind of chimed in on that too.
Cal Cities is sponsoring the bill this year, so they are the official sponsors of the bill. I know that they've sent out blasts to their membership several times. I know we've engaged with cities kind of all over the state and really been trying to raise the profile of this. Obviously, the potential financial impact to cities from, if this bill isn't done, is significant. So just trying to really kind of raise that profile.
My other question too, I think a good shout out to Congressman Panetta. I mean, he's really working for Pastor Rubles big time. And again, I appreciate your efforts in Townsend and working with Diane Zanotti. I'm sure our local rep, getting these funds coming both for, the library, which is it pretty much, I was gonna ask Chris real side note on this, what's our budget to redo that library, and how much of this 1.5 would it accomplish?
So if I recall the numbers correctly, I think we estimated that the city would have about a $1.5 million budget gap or to make up. The Library Foundation was planning on chipping in, I think, about $1 million. I'm looking at it, Helica. And then we have some development impact fees as well that would pay for it. So the general fund gap, I guess that we would say, is about $1.5 million. It's probably important to put out to point out that we have a strong track record the last several years of obtaining funding through this program that Mr. Elliott talked about. However, typically what we've seen over the last few years is that we will ask for a certain amount and it'll come back slightly less.
Yeah.
So I would anticipate that's if it gets through the process here, that'll likely be what happens. However, that's better than zero. And yeah, we're much closer to our goal of seeing that project come to fruition should this money come available to the city.
And the other thing I was going to ask a little bit about, Casey, was the federal $1 million grant to Cal Poly for the spaceport training. We met with actually Dr. Armstrong down there at the REACH conference, and he was a little concerned about how it's a matching grant, so they have to come up with $1 million as well. So I know that we were kind of throwing out the fact that Pastor Robles has already done a lot of revenue putting toward our spaceport licensing effort that I think would qualify, and I'm not sure if staff can fill in on that, if that's kind of an avenue that we're trying to seek or make sure that can help.
Yeah, we're in continued conversation with Cal Poly to make sure that we are at the table as they look to utilize that funding to establish the Pastor Robles Space Research Center. So we have an active request now out to meet with them to go over those details. I am not as familiar with the NASA appropriations that come through the CPF program. But that's the purpose of the meeting, is to sit down and talk about specifically what they need to activate those dollars here in the city. And that meeting request has been sent. We're just waiting to hear back from them.
And we did. We did have a sit-down meeting this afternoon out at the airport with NASA. They came down, and it's very interesting what they're telling us. So it's a good partnership there also. That's all I had. Councilman Bausch.
Thank you. Casey, circling back to Senator Laird's proposed legislation. The nuts and bolts, from what I understand, are good, but I'm also concerned, does it reduce the threat of litigation that's been plaguing cities all over?
Yeah, effectively the bill is trying to reset the structure to how it's traditionally operated under the Prop 218. Right. So yeah, the idea would be that this would prevent cities from being subject to these lawsuits by clarifying that vehicle code section that's been referenced within the Redlands and other cases has been, it was not intended for the way it's being applied.
Yep. Anyone from the public would like to have anything to say about Casey's report? Welcome.
Hi, Linda George, 3126 Spring Street. I have one question and two questions. On the cannabis federal money you're getting, what is that for? Is that for the police department and for the city to create a program? And in the federal request, I am still pursuing Mercy Air or a replacement for such. I did get a call from Washington a few months back that Panetta is committed to having some alternative to Mercy Air. I just wanted to add, not to be gratuitous, but AB 2166 needs to be really watched carefully. It's by Buffy Wicks. She's proclaimed herself a self-expert in modular housing.